You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC here on ESPN Plus on the day that Bartomeu resigned as president of Barcelona. And boy, did he drop a big bombshell in his resignation speech. Jules will be with us a little later on to discuss that. Plus, Sam Marsden with an exclusive interview with Sergiño Dest. But we start in the Champions League in Group B. I don't think many would have predicted Shakhtar Donetsk to be a top of the group after two matches, but that's exactly how it's played out up to now. Draws galore today. Finished Shakhtar 0, Inter 0. We'll speak about that in a moment, but let's start, shall we, with Borussia Mönchengladbach 2, Real Madrid 2, as we welcome in Gab Marcotti, Ali Moreno and Stevie Nicol to the show. Stevie, Madrid left it late, didn't they, to get a point out of this one. Casemiro with the late goal.
Well, I guess you've got to give them credit for sticking at it. The goals they did get, the two late goals, are just balls that were thrown in the box. And up until the 87th minute when Benzema scored, Borussia Mönchengladbach had dealt with every single thing that Real Madrid had tried to throw at them with ease. And, of course, on the break, they were absolutely looking dangerous every time they went forward, you know. I think the turning point in the game, actually, if you look at it now, is Plea, because at 2-0, he's one-on-one with Courtois, mm-hmm. and Courtois makes a good save. Now, if he scores, the game's over, but I guess you've got to praise Madrid for sticking at it, but let's be honest, they were woeful, created absolutely nothing.
Again, woeful, Ali. You know, after what happened in El Clasico, you thought maybe they can regroup and get a little momentum going, but it was back to those sad performances against Cadiz and Shakhtar.
Yeah, all the positive momentum, all the optimism, all the positive energy and vibe after Clásico. Turns out it's only really sweeping things under the rug. Because to be quite honest with you, this may be closer to what the real version of this team is. A team that is vulnerable defensively, that every time that Borussia Mönchengladbach went on the counter, as Stevie just alluded to, Marcos Thuram and Alassane Pea looked like they were going to create something, that they were going to get in behind, that they were going to do a quick little 1-2, that somehow with the strength and the speed of Thuram, they were going to get around Lucas Vázquez, or that Rafael Varane was going to get pulled out of position alongside Sergio Ramos. And it happened time and time again, to the point that you just saying to yourself, man, for all the big names that Real Madrid has out on the field, it is these two guys, Thuram and Alassane Plea, that look the more dangerous, that look the more likely to score. Whereas on the other side, and the attacking half of Real Madrid, all these big names, all this talent, all this perceived amount of players that can create chances for themselves and for others, not a whole lot. Sterile. Just crosses into the box time and time and time again, and Ginter is clearing them out, and Hervé is clearing them out. Maybe sometimes a little difference was created from Federico Valverde coming out of the midfield that gives you something in terms of the change of pace, and maybe Luka Modric coming off the bench. But to be quite honest with you, it goes back to a conversation that we've had in the past, Dan, and that is you look at both Barcelona and Real Madrid, and the biggest takeaway from El Clásico is both of these teams have major flaws, and both those teams are vulnerable. And we saw more confirmation of that today from Real Madrid, who were fortunate to get out of that game with a point.
Stevie, I could ask you, I could say, what's wrong with Real Madrid? And then you'll answer going, well, it's simple. They can't defend. Why can't or why doesn't Zidane sort this out?
Well, you're constantly changing your back four for a start, so that doesn't help. And your two most experienced players, Ramos and Varane, are just not on the same page. I mean, today, Ramos is stepping forward and Varane stepping back. That's why they got caught so many times with balls in behind them. So if your two mainstays are not at it and are not in tune, what chance have you got if you've got somebody like Vázquez, who's not even a defender, who shouldn't be playing there, And you've got Mendy on the outside, who I don't know what he does, because he doesn't go forward well and he doesn't defend. So all in all, with the personnel he has, I'm not so sure he fixes his back line.
Gab, how close are we to having any sort of conversation that maybe Zidane could be in trouble and, for example, Mr. Pochettino could be coming in?
I think the conversation, when you manage Real Madrid and you lose three out of four games, even if one of the ones in between that you won is a Clásico, is always going to be there. It was there before the Clásico. I think realistically, the way this club is set up, the situation that they're in, sacking Zidane is the last thing that they want to do. If the issue is the players that have been injured and the fact that this is not a well put together team, it's hard to pin the blame on Zidane. So as we said before the Clásico, he's built up so much sporting credit. And in some ways he's such an easy manager for Florentino that I just can't see him being sacked anytime soon. That said, there's serious questions to be asked. Most of all, about the preparation. What Stevie said there about the way they defended against Plea and Thuram. Borussia Mönchengladbach has a very distinctive way of playing. Marco Rose is a brilliant manager, but if you prepare, you know what's coming. And to set up the way they did, the two center backs getting their movements wrong, it almost suggests to me that they didn't prepare for this game at all. And they thought, oh, look, who are these 11 dudes who are showing up? You know, no problem.
Just wanted to add the fact that, okay, Gab just said the preparation for this match and the way that Borussia Mönchengladbach played against Real Madrid. Well, it's no different than the way that Shakhtar Donetsk played against Real Madrid just a week ago. You just saw the same version of a similar team, and a team that can cause you problems when you get stretched, and in transition they can get in behind, and because they can be vertical in that transition, they can force some issues for you. They can create some problems. They can score goals that way. You just saw it against Shakhtar, and there was no real change. There was no real adjustment. You found the same issues that you found against Shakhtar a week ago. You had them tonight against Borussia Mönchengladbach. That's an issue for Zidane, and that's an issue for the players.
Well, Shakhtar topped the table after a 0-0 draw against Inter Milan. It was overall a frustrating game for Antonio Conte's side, Gab.
Yeah, and look, I mean, there's two ways to look at this. And then Conte, obviously, realistically, you know, as managers do, highlighted the fact that Inter created a ton of chances, which is true. Shakhtar created very few chances, which is also true, and they kept another clean sheet. Okay, well, ho. However, flip side, Inter's buildup was so slow, and it felt, especially in the second half, when you thought, all right, you know, keep the pressure on, start converting those chances, it seemed that they felt that they got worse as the game went on. And I think there's questions to be asked there. I think he waited too long with his changes again. And ultimately, you have to bury the chances that you create.
Stevie?
I'm sorry. I watched this game. I don't know where all these chances were. They hit the crossbar twice in the first half, and Martinez missed the only one, by the way. There's only one chance in the game where you can turn around and say they should have scored.
The phone's up.
And that was where Martinez, after Brozovic's shot, and it's parried out to him, and he's got an empty net, and he puts it wide. After that, I'm sorry, I'm not getting this all these chances.
Yeah, Gab, you're getting the phone waved right at you.
I don't know if I mean, need to,
I tell, you know
to
the one, I'll tell you the one thing that actually, Gab, the one thing that did annoy me about this game was Conte. You know, if ever you can point a finger at a coach getting things wrong, I think today's a prime example. I mean, Hakimi and Ashley Young gave them absolutely zero. That's where all the space was, away out wide, and they gave them nothing. And then he puts Perisic on up front and takes Martinez off. Why? Number one, why would he not put him wide and give us something on the wide area? And then for me, the biggest mistake he made of all. In the first half, it was clear the only way you were going to get through this team was to hit some nice balls in behind. Somebody with a bit of guile. Somebody with a nice touch. Because they were playing a high line and that was the only way you were going to do it. And he waits until the 12th minute. He waits till 12 minutes to go before bringing Eriksen on, the man that can actually play that kind of pass. Because before that, you've got Vidal being the playmaker, trying to put balls in behind and try to switch 30 and 40-yard balls. When did he ever do that? So I think the fact that he didn't bring Eriksen on at halftime was a I think that was a huge mistake.
I mean, like, Eriksen's a whole other issue with Conte. I agree. This was a game for him. He has this Vidal fetish, this Vidal obsession. You know what it's like as a manager. Some people are the manager's pet, and Vidal is his pet. And I think that's the reality of it. And while in certain games he can still be a difference maker, when he plays 3-4 games in a row, you start getting diminishing returns. I think this is, again, they convert those chances in the first half, and maybe didn't count that many. The XG tell a very different tale, but I know not everybody's a big fan of expected goals. but equally, there's no question that the team fell apart in the second half. Ashley Young really, really struggled. And again, you know, this guy's been out for a long time. You chuck him in there. You know, he's had COVID, whatever. You chuck him in there from a start in a game like this, and he struggles, and you don't deal with it until late in the second half. I think a lot of this is on Conte tonight.
Quick word, Ali.
Yeah, I think the most disappointing part for me, if you're an Inter fan, is that as the game went on, rather than continue to mount pressure and build momentum, it's almost as if Inter just kind of took a step back and didn't quite know what to do in the attack as Shakhtar just put numbers behind the ball. And they just reverted back to slow possession of the ball, horizontal possession of the ball, passing the ball sideways and back, and allowing Shakhtar to take a step forward. It never really looked like Inter was going to score tonight. Yes, a couple of chances, one for Lautaro Martinez, but that was it. And then after that chance, there was nothing. Late in the game, you think that Inter is going to push forward, and we're going to get 3 points, because then after that, we have to play two games back-to-back against Real Madrid. We need points. There was none of that from Inter.
Who's going through this group, Stevie?
Oh, well, I still think Real Madrid will find a way. I just don't see how Shakhtar can do it. I would say Real Madrid will go through because Real Madrid always find a way.
Meanwhile, Stevie, how are you feeling? Many people have written to us over the last couple of hours suggesting that Liverpool need you in the back line. And maybe you could...
Desperate times.
It is indeed desperate times, of course, accentuated by the fact Fabinho forced to go off just 30 minutes into this game. Bare bones time, isn't it, at the back for Liverpool, Stevie?
Well, I think we should try and get Lovren back on loan. Maybe that would solve the problem. I see Saka's not getting a game at Palace either. Yeah, I mean, we're basically down to Reece Williams, who's not even a centre back. So it's, it's just backs to the wall time. You know, it just means that defensively, you take no chances, you clear your lines, you keep things simple, and you try and keep a good shape. And Joe Gomez is going to have to take the burden of that, because he's the only recognised centre-back really left. I can't imagine Matip being fit again before, at least this time next year, because he never is. So there's going to be a lot of... I'd say Joe Gomez is going to have to grow up very quickly in the next couple of weeks.
Klopp, by the way, saying it's a hamstring and it doesn't look good, talking about Fabinho. Meanwhile, Gab, one of the most entertaining games today, Atalanta take on Ajax. Ajax 2-0 up, the Italians getting it back for a draw.
Yeah, Duvan Zapata getting them back into the game. And look, are you surprised? It's a roller coaster. Roller coasters go up and they go down. Oh. And they go up and they go down. I mean, I think Atalanta playing Ajax, a team that scored 13 goals at the weekend, you know, in some ways, it's not going to be a great matchup for them. And I think it showed. But once again, they showed a lot of character in coming back to 2-2. This is a different Ajax side, but this is an Ajax side that I think has kind of the new generation coming through, whether it's Antony or Gravenbach or whoever. I think they showed it against Liverpool the week before as well. You know, the difference between the two teams was that was that sort of bizarre goal. So put all these things together, and you know, I think there's going to be regret for dropping the points. But, you know, Ajax at home is no gimme by any stretch.
So let's just take a look at how Group D stands. Liverpool then, two wins out of two, sit at the top with 6 points. Atalanta on 4, Ajax on 1.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Josep Bartomeu is out at Barcelona. The president resigned on Tuesday and left with quite the mic drop. This is what he had to say. What we have experienced these last few months exceeds any limit. Me, my family and colleagues have been insulted and threatened. We have resigned without being able to complete the economic measures necessary. I hope that in coming days a salary cut can be agreed. Otherwise, there will be very grave consequences for the immediate future of the club. He continues, I can announce some extraordinary news, and he's not kidding. Yesterday, the board of directors approved the acceptance of the requirements to participate in a future European Super League of football clubs, a project promoted by the big clubs in Europe, which would guarantee the future financial sustainability of the club. The European Super League guarantees the club will remain in the members' hands. Javier Tebas, La Liga president, was quick to respond. He said, unfortunately, unfortunate that Bartomeu announces on his last day participation in a phantom competition which would ruin FC Barcelona and confirms his ignorance of the football industry. Sad finale for a president who did some things right but ended up making mistakes. Wow. Gab Marcotti is with us. Julian Laurent joins the party as well. Gab, blimmin' it.
It's deja vu all over again, right? So the story comes out a week ago. Ed Woodward said he's never heard of it, blah, blah, blah. I wrote a column. I spoke to a lot of people. The best I could get is that, you know, folks are listening, but nobody's going out on a limb. Well, now the guy who's as he's walking out the door, he says, oh, by the way, we just voted to do this. Now, look, I think all the uncertainty about this, all the skepticism still applies. There's just one thing I need to get off my chest, though, about Bartomeu here. When he's talking about this is necessary to guarantee the future survival of Barcelona, blah, blah, blah. The reason Barcelona are in this mess is because they have 800 million euros. They're that far in the hole. The reason that they're in the hole is because of stupid decisions that were made and irresponsible decisions that were made while he was president of Barcelona. A club, to survive, a club needs to control costs. The single biggest cost for any club are wages. So somebody signed those players to those big contracts. Somebody agreed to those big transfer fees. And gee, guess who the Barcelona president was? It was him. If it's about survival with Barcelona, they can survive paying players lower wages. Contracts expire, you can sell players, you always have that out. So I don't want to hear anybody pull the survival card, we big rich club need to survive. That is frankly offensive. As for the Super League itself, as I said, I think it's going to take three things. It's going to take private equity or whatever investors to stump up money because you can't have an immediate shortfall and clubs are going to want guarantees, at least in the short term. It's going to take other clubs to come out on a limb. Real clubs, not somebody who would have been voted out anyway and really represents nobody other than himself at this stage. And it's realistically going to take FIFA to be on board with it. And as of right now, FIFA certainly haven't come out, they haven't knocked us all down, but they haven't come out and said, oh yeah, we think this is a good idea, we want to circumvent UEFA. So those three things need to be in place. Right now, we don't have them. All we have is Bartomeu, who's got nothing at stake, talking as he exits stage left.
Right, Jules, let's take it down to basics. What is a European Super League? Is it going to be the top teams from each of the big leagues will go into this league, so there'll be no domestic football at weekends and then Champions League midweek? Or is it something that's going to replace the Champions League? What is it?
Well, we're not exactly sure yet what the whole details of it. We know it's a closed league, a bit like what we see in the US with the NBA, the NFL, etc., with 18 leagues, all coming from the five big leagues. So maybe you'll have five English clubs, three French clubs, five Italians, you know, whatever they want, the way they want to do it. And then there's no relegation, no promotion. It's that core of clubs who pretty much face each other every week, like in the Champions League format, except that it's a very different format because it's just a league and it works as a league. So we don't have many more details apart from that. We know that he will bring more money to the top clubs than the Champions League currently does, but that's it. So like Gab says, we're still far away from it. I don't care what Bartomeu says. For me, he's as incompetent on the Super League that he was as a Barcelona president anyway. So I don't really care what he says. And by the way, acceptance of requirements doesn't mean anything. So I don't know what they voted for, but there's still a long, long way, like Gab has explained, and why there's a long way, like Gab explained, before we can see any start of an idea of a Super League.
But when we've talked about this before, Gab, you said if it's going to happen, it's going to happen within months.
If it's going to happen, yeah, I did. That's what I was told. I think it makes sense. It doesn't mean it's going to happen. But right now, this is where clubs are at their most vulnerable. A lot of these clubs, they may be highly valued as assets, but they are effectively, they're cash poor. Owners, with the exception maybe of the Glazers, every penny that comes in effectively goes back out. Right? Nobody's actually making any money here. So this is something that is very attractive to certain owners, whether you're Fenway, whether you're Roman Abramovich, whether you're Andrea Agnelli, potentially you could be making more money out of this. Where I think this argument falls down with the Super League, and why I've always been skeptical of it, is this. If it is a traditional league, like we talked about, leave aside all the other hurdles, but if it is a traditional 18-team, 20-team league, however many you want, you're only going to have one winner. And all these teams that are used to being mid-table, all of a sudden, yeah, they may be profitable, but they're not going to win anything. Mm. Now, that might be fine, again, if you're a Glazer or if you're a U.S. owner or Fenway or whatever, because you're saying, well, we're running a business and look, we're profitable. But unless you start... you model it on U.S. sports where there is parity, where if you stink now, you might become good in 5 or 10 years. It's not going to work. If you're the president of Barcelona, or Real Madrid, or Bayern, or Borussia Dortmund, you don't profit from it. You don't get to keep the profits that your club makes. So you do it for the glory or whatever. And I'll tell you what: if you're finishing 10th every season in the newfound Super League, doesn't really matter how much revenues your club is making. Your members are going to want you out because they want to see their team win. And that's another thing that I haven't had decent answers for.
What's the percentage chance this is going to happen, Gab?
Don't make me put percentages on this. It's pie in the... Certainly, I can tell you this. The proposal that they came up with, 18 teams, all from those five leagues, makes zero sense. If you're going to do this, go the whole hog. If you're going to do this, make this commercially viable. Follow the model of the NFL and the NBA. And then that means you put a team in Berlin, not because Hertha are great, but because Berlin is a big, wealthy city with a huge catchment area of fans. And you put a team in Moscow. And then you look at it and you say, hey, does Manchester need two teams when there's another team, Liverpool, half an hour down the road? Probably not. Does Milan need two teams? No, because look, we can open up another territory, put a team there. Does Madrid need two teams? And once you start talking like that, which is what's required if you are going to make this really financially viable in the longer term, is all of a sudden you're going to get teams saying, well, wait a minute, why am I cut out of this? And you're really going totally against the whole history of football. In that version, it's not going to work. There are other possibilities, which we don't have time to run through, where it could work. But right now, it's very, very slim. And like I said, without those three things in place, without big money up front, without other clubs coming out in the open for real and explaining the reasons for it beyond money, and without FIFA being on board with this, which is, would be a huge gamble for FIFA and their president, Gianni Infantino, to take, because this wouldn't be popular in many quarters, I don't see how this could possibly get off the ground.
Meanwhile, Jules, Bartomeu, of course, resigning. He was going to be out in March anyway. Like, everything, like, social media blew up. He's gone, hooray, he's resigned. Does it actually matter? Does it make any difference to Barcelona?
As in what? They can have the chance to actually elect a president that is competent.
But he was going anyway, Jules. He couldn't stand again, we knew that.
I know, but you've gained 6 months.
6 months of what?
But you've gained 6 months. So instead of having the elections in March, for example, or in April, you can have them much sooner. Two, it's very unlikely that anyone from his camp who would have stood for election at some point, he could not stand, but one of his associates could have stood. That's not going to happen anymore. I mean, they're persona non grata at Barcelona, you know, at the Camp Nou anyway. So you've got rid of all those incompetent bunch anyway. And I think it's a fresh start. And with fresh starts, it's always the same. The sooner, the better. The sooner you can get those incompetent people out of the door, the better. Whether, you know, so you do now instead of having to wait until March, because between now and March, it could have even made things worse. So at least now you know he's out there. He can't hurt your club even more. He can't harm your club even more. He's done already enough damage that I think the sooner he's out, the better. And I'm glad he's now, and that the club and the socios didn't have to wait until March.
So then what happens if you've got a new president who runs on the ticket that basically he's going to bring in Xavi Hernandez as his coach? How does that work with regards to the situation that we're in at the moment with Ronald Koeman? Jules.
Well, Ronald Koeman knew when he signed that he was only going to be there a year anyway, because he was pretty clear, I think, to a lot of people, certainly Victor Font is the main favorite to be elected as the next president. He would have been the same in March. He's still the main candidate now. We all know what his program is about. We all know who his manager will be. As you said, it would be Xavi. And I think when Ronald Koeman agreed to become the Barcelona manager in the summer, he knew that as well. So he knew his time was counted anyway. He knew that he wouldn't be there years and years and years. So that's why he's got a short-term contract anyway. And I don't think it would be a big issue to get rid of him and bring Xavi in if Victor Font wins the elections, as you could expect will happen.
Is Messi now going to strip off and reveal a Superman sign? He's ready to go again, Gam.
I think everything's on the table. I think there's many ways to look at this, and you know, some people will speak of this as a victory for the culés and the Barcelona democracy and whatever else. This is fundamentally, I think, a victory for Gerard Piqué and Lionel Messi as well, because this was an issue. Whether Messi stays or leaves, you know, he will, one of the many gifts that he will leave behind and bestow upon Barcelona fans is that he was part of Bartomeu leaving and leaving early. And I think this opens up a whole number of scenarios. Gerard Piqué has been talked about endlessly as a future Barcelona president. I mean, he's what, 34, 35? It's not going to be for a while. But I think this is a chance for certain people to really go and shape the future of this club. You know, whether, again, I don't know that much about Font beyond what I've read in the press, but I think what Barcelona need and really could benefit from is this generation that were part of the greatest ever Barcelona team, a team that I think redefined football in many ways, having them back in, influencing things, you know, perhaps in the same way that Cruyff did after he left, but he came back sort of being sage and an advisor to the top. I think it's pretty exciting if you're a Barcelona fan. You know, now you can turn the page. Now there is no threat that whatever stooge Bartomeu, you know, sent out to represent them in the election is going to win. So this is a turning of the page, and yeah, I think this could well cause Lionel Messi to evaluate things differently at the end of the season. He's got all the luxury in the world. He knows for sure that he can walk for free if he wants to come June. So he's got that in the bag. He can sit there and he can wait and he can ask himself, and do I want to be part of this future? And the best part is he doesn't have to answer that question until June 30th, 2021.
Brilliant stuff, guys. As always, thank you very much. Barcelona, of course, in action on Wednesday. Huge Champions League match for them as they take on Juventus without Cristiano Ronaldo in Turin.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Two wins out of two then for Manchester City in Group C after a 3-0 victory away against Marseille. Jules still with us. Shaka Hislop joins the conversation as well. Shaka, this is the best performance I've seen from Man City, I think, this season.
Yeah, and it's one that they had to work pretty hard for. Marseille played five at the back, three in midfield, and just denied City any real space, especially without an out-and-out striker. Their front three played very flat and found things a little bit frustrating in the first 45. Marseille played a part in City's opening goal, but then, in truth, it just became too much for Marseille later on. City romped home comfortably and fully deserving. Just too much talent and for too long wore Marseille down.
Why don't City play like this every week? Every day, it feels like at the moment.
well, for starters, you're not going to come up against a team like Marseille who are going to just stay with eight at the back and somehow hope to get something up against
But they do, Shaka, don't they? They do in the Premier League. That's what people do. They pack the defence and then try and get them on the counter. We've seen teams do that a lot. It's not like Marseille did anything particularly different. Just Manchester City just seemed a lot better today.
I thought they were frustrated for long periods. They controlled the ball from beginning to end and found chances hard to come by, especially when you look at the first 45. I really just think that the big difference between Marseille and maybe what you see from others in the Premier League is that it just got worn down. That the pressure just told, they couldn't stand it any longer. Eventually, the dam burst, and you saw City romp home. Whereas at times, I think in the league, City have tried to get their defenders involved and push too far up and left holes at the back and open to counterattack and sometimes get exposed. No real issues like that against Marseille, who I don't think really were hoping for much more than a draw by the looks of it.
Jules, Shaka saying it's easy for City when they take on a team from a Farmers League.
It's easy when you take on a team like Marseille. That's why it is. They wish they're playing Marseille every week, Dan. I'm telling you that.
Just don't with your PSG ways, having a go at poor old Marseille. They beat you, didn't they, earlier in the season?
They did beat us. And you know what? I was disappointed because I really expected them to go for it. I knew they would play five at the back. And that the idea, at least the idea, was to play like Leicester did a few weeks ago, like Lyon did in the final eight against City. But they never turned up. You can't just have a low block of five defenders and that's it. That's not enough to beat City. You also need, when you have the ball, to use it in the right way. You know, to go on the counter, but have that verticality, to go quick in transition, which they never did at all. It was embarrassing at times to see the way they were playing. And when you gift the goal to City the way they did after 15 minutes, then the game is over. Marseille were never going to come back from being 1-0 down and concede a goal in that way anyway. So, yeah, of course, at times they made it a bit difficult for City, but that third goal is poetry in motion. The second goal is poor defending again. And I guess there could have been more. It's just, I really thought and really hoped that Marseille would go for it. But if you're not aggressive, if you don't at times put a lot of intensity in the game, you're never going to beat them.
Manchester City, of course, up there in the conversation when it comes to favourites to win this tournament, though very much at the top at the moment, Bayern Munich, and it's not even close. Although, Shaka, they were made to work hard for their 3 points today.
Yeah, especially what we've seen from Bayern in recent weeks, both in the league and Champions League. I fully expected Bayern to again romp home. But they were made to work for this win, Bayern Munich, and probably that's a little bit of a wake-up call for them. A good thing. I'm not sure how to spin this other than Bayern get the 3 points, made to work a little harder than we've maybe come to expect from Bayern. I still think they're the best team in European football and continues to show.
Didn't you have Aston Villa at the top of your power rankings though, Shaq?
Yeah, that's because Bayern Munich lost to Hoffenheim 4-1 in the league a few weeks ago. That's all. That my power rankings does not mean to suggest that I think Villa are going to beat Bayern Munich 9 times out of 10, Daniel.
14 straight Champions League victories for Bayern. It's something else, Jules.
It's incredible. And even when they're not on a great, great day like today, I mean, they had a lot of possession, but where I thought would be fragile defensively, and Lokomotiv had scored a good goal, but also had a couple of chances, Zé-Louis at the end as well. And then Joshua Kimmich just comes, pops out, and then scored a wonderful volley to win the game. And it's just like, it's just incredible. They've got so much confidence, so much momentum, that even when they're not playing well, they know exactly that they will find a way of winning. And they were not as clinical as against Atletico or against Frankfurt the weekend either, but they still know exactly what to do or how to do enough to win a game like this. And I don't know who will stop them, if someone will, but they will have to be really, really strong.
I was getting ahead of myself. Apparently, it's still only 13. Oh, rubbish, Bayern. They can, of course, make it 14 Salzburg in the third round of matches. Salzburg were up 2-1 against Atleti in Madrid. Atleti, though, coming from behind to get the win there and register their first points of the group. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, as I mentioned before, the big game, Juventus taking on Barcelona in Turin tomorrow. Serginho Dest expected to start once again. Ahead of the game, Sam Marsden caught up with the US international and started off by talking to him about playing El Clasico in an empty stadium.
For you, how strange is it without fans, especially in a game like a Clasico?
It's really strange, you know. It's really strange because you feel it, but you don't really feel it, you know, the pressure. And I think the pressure is something that makes football, you know, that makes the sport, you know, the fans, everything around it, the support. So it feels just, it's not like boring because you want to play, you know. Of course, soccer is always nice, but, you know, it's just way better with defense and the support from outside.
Did your teammates tell you how different a Clásico was without fans? How strange it was for them?
They told me like it's so much pressure then. But yeah, I have to see it with my own eyes, you know. So
something to look forward to.
Yeah, for real.
And what is it that's in those sort of those games that Koeman has asked for from you in terms of, you know, attacking or defending? I seem to notice you like to sort of attack not just outside but also come inside, especially at Ajax and stuff. Has there been much instructions from Koeman from what he expects from you?
Not much, to be honest. I try to play my game. First, you know, like the first thing is to defend. You know, because I'm a defender, so right now I'm trying to defend a lot. And then, if possible, I go forward. And, you know, before at Ajax, I went maybe a little bit too much forward and forgot my defense. But now I'm not forgetting my defense, you know. So I'm just I'm looking for the moments to go forward. But, you know, I feel like I'm getting, like, slowly more confident in the team, you know, and just more in the team. So I feel like in a couple of weeks, you know, I will be totally myself and, you know, give everything I have. You know, obviously, I give everything I have right now, but, you know, then I feel more comfortable in the team and I think it's better for me.
We've spoken about how difficult the run of games Barca have had since you signed. Doesn't get much easier this week with the game away at Juventus, but I guess this is the reason you play for these clubs.
Yeah, this is the reason. You want to play every game against the best opponents, you know, and then you can, you know, see where you're at right now with your development. I think I'm on a good way. I think I still have to improve. There's not enough room for me to improve, but I think I'm on a good way. I like those games.
And the Juve game, if he's fit, he's obviously just recovered from COVID, was on the bench last night. You could be up against one of your US teammates, Weston McKennie. I don't know if you spoke to him about the game.
Yeah, no, I didn't spoke against him about the game or with him about the game. But he told me, you know, when I signed for Barca, he told me, like, you know, see you in the Champions League. yeah, it's nice to play against him, you know. We're good friends in the national team. So, we're going to take the win. Yeah.
I was going to ask you about that because obviously you're two of the guys from the national team that have got really, really big transfers this summer to two of Europe's biggest clubs. Did you speak to each other about that when it was happening, about, you know, advice about, you know, whether there are other options, what you should do, what you shouldn't do?
No, we didn't speak with each other, to be honest. No. He had his own transfer, I had mine. And after we both signed for new clubs, We just followed each other on Instagram and see what happened, but I didn't really spoke with him, you know, first.
Thank you very much, Sam. Just one thing, Weston McKennie ruled out of that big game tomorrow. It is, of course, a game that you imagine will dominate the next edition of the show. Well, that brings us to the end of today's programme. A big thank you to Gab, to Shaka and to Jules. Stay tuned, though. Extra Time is next with Ali and Stevie. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Ali Moreno is with us, as is Stevie Nichols, Stevie's grandson, waiting for him to finish so he can use the internet. What's he going to do on the internet, Stevie? What's the latest in-game with Patrick at the moment?
Hey, Pat! What game are you playing? Honestly, I told him to shut up and don't see in, and he won't answer me.
Oh, that's good.
Thanks for testing him.
Tell him to play Among Us. I like Among Us. Get him to play that. Right. Is Stevie fit enough to re-sign and play centre-back?
No.
Was that Patrick?
Zero. no, absolutely not. Can't get above a walk.
Oh. Ali, don't look so surprised. With Fabinho injured, should Liverpool switch to a back three, Stevie?
The problem is, you don't have three natural, you know, in my opinion, for a back three, you need two centre-backs and somebody in the middle who's going to sweep everything up and read the play. We've got one centre-back in Joe Gomez, who right now is going to be the guy who's in charge. So he's going to have to be the one sweeping everything up,
yeah,
regardless of whether they play two or three. So I don't really see how they can play three. I think they're just going to have to go with the young kid Williams and hope that Gomez is mature enough to talk him through whatever time it needs before we can get either Fabinho fit or Matip fit.
Can Henderson drop back there, Milner there?
Well, they could probably do that in a back four, but I don't think so in a back three, no. Back four, yes. Henderson could probably drop in there. But again, Gomez would have to talk him through it. You know, Fabinho has played centre-back in his Monaco days, so he's experienced in that position, whereas Henderson's not. And so, again, Gomez would have to talk him through it. But if you're just going to pull somebody out the middle of the park and put them at centre-back, you have to play a four. You can't play a three.
Do you think now that Bartomeu is gone, Ali, Barca will win the treble and Messi will win the Golden Boot and the Ballon d'Or?
Okay. I know is the short answer to that. This team has very clear flaws on the field. I'm guessing you're getting rid of a very clear flaw off the field, but that doesn't address some of the issues that you still have going on. In terms of decision making, in terms of who plays in the back, who plays through the midfield, what is the role of Lionel Messi, what is the role of Antoine Griezmann, where does these pieces fit in and how do they fit in together? Those things are yet to be answered by Ronald Koeman and the players on the field. And until those things are answered, then the answer to this very question is no.
Stevie, how difficult was it to play against small European clubs in Europe? Seems like Midtjylland, all they wanted to do is foul.
Can't honestly say it was a huge problem, to be honest. Oh, listen, I'd far rather face a team who are going to feel inferior, who are going to be inferior, who the only thing they can do is scrap and chase and run and pull and you name it, as opposed to playing against a proper team that can get the ball down and play and maybe outplay you. So, no, I don't remember us ever really having a problem with so-called minnows, other than pre-season games where we weren't fit, but not in proper games.
Ali, what's the weirdest dressing room ritual you saw one of your teammates perform pre or post match?
Okay, well, there's a few, but I have to tell you, I had a couple of teammates with the Venezuelan national team, one of them in particular, who had a little bit of a reputation for having extracurricular activities outside of his marriage.
Right.
And so he wasn't exactly living life correctly, if you will. And yet, before the games, I see this guy lighting all sorts of candles to this like personal altar that he had in the locker room, with all sorts of, you know, crucifix and Virgin Marys and all. And actually, he also had other religions involved. So they were sort of, wow, counteracting each other, counterbalancing each other. But my thought was, if you got going on what you got going on in your life, and if indeed you believe in what you believe, do you really think that the priority is going to be whether we win this game or not? I don't think so. You got to sort your life out outside of this locker room before we care about what you do on the field. So, you know, I don't know if it's weird as much as it was for me. Like, nah, man. I believe in what you believe, but you first got to sort out what's going on at home.
Ali, was he the same one? Was it you that told me the story that you met his wife one week and then a completely different girl the next week?
Actually, it's the time span was not a week. It was
half-time,
I think,
full-time?
My first or second call-up to the national team. And I arrive in the national team hotel and I meet this guy and he introduces me to his wife. We then go to team lunch, whatever, go to training, come back from training, and I see the same guy with a different lady. I'm thinking, this is, I don't know, his niece, his daughter, I have no idea. And he introduces me to his girlfriend. And this was, I'm talking 4 or 5 hours later, in the same hotel. And I'm like, well, this is a different world. This is a different world and something that I'm not familiar with. So I'm just going to go ahead and get in the elevator and go up to my room.
Stevie, pre or post-match rituals?
Oh, post-match is easy. Have as many pints as you can.
Right, yeah.
That was a simple
standard one.
The daft one was Grobbelaar. He started doing it at home, where through the back where the baths were, because we used to have the baths before it was mandatory that you couldn't have a bath anymore. And the light switch was next to it, so we couldn't go out to warm up until he had kicked the ball against the light switch and put the lights out.
Oh.
And he started doing this at home. Now, that was fine, because obviously he's got his sport, he's got his distance, he's got everything else. But then he started doing it away from home. Oh my goodness, it used to drive us insane, but we couldn't do anything about it because he wouldn't go out unless he had knocked the light off. So that was probably the daftest one, other than the usual stuff with the left boot and the left sock and all that.
Stevie, can Sergio Ramos be a world-class forward?
No. When he's forward, he attacks the ball well. I mean, he did it in the Champions League. That was why they got the equaliser in the last minute against Mönchengladbach, because he attacks a ball that's thrown in the box and knocks it back. But playing up front is a different ball game, as Ali will tell you. You know, playing with your back to goal is a completely different ball game than having things in front of you. So, no, he wouldn't be able to play as a world-class centre-forward. But he is good at going and attacking balls that are whipped into the box, as he's shown. And he's a great penalty taker.
I believe he started his career as a striker and then slowly moved back into defence. Fascinating, Daniel. Thank you for that.
Well, so that's why he was moved back to defence then, because you want that brilliant as a striker. There you go.
Does Stevie still believe Zlatan will score under 10 goals in Serie A this season?
I guess I may be wrong with that one.
I heard Mark Donaldson bring it up in commentary. He threw you right under the bus, Stevie.
Of course he did.
Well, he can't wait to do that with me. He's always after me. I don't know what his problem is with me, but he's always doing it.
It's because you didn't put the
I would suggest
you.
That he did send me a message and goes, I can't believe you haven't got your book on the shelf behind you. Little did he know, because he sent me that, I'm definitely not putting it up.
Exactly. Why would you have your own book when you've got box sets of Casualty to show the world? Do Ali or Stevie still hold any grudges against reporters or former players like Xhaka? This is off the back of yesterday, where a lady wrote that Xhaka was rubbish because it was too cold for him in the game, and he still remembers her name to this day. Ali, you hold so many grudges in your life. You must have a list.
Okay, first of all, let's clear that up. I don't hold grudges. It's just if I don't like you, I don't like you, and that's it. I don't spend my day saying, well, I don't like this guy because of a grudge. No. That he's just written off, and see you guys later, take care. I don't even know you, and if I see you in the side of the road, I keep driving. That's simple as that.
Over you.
now that that's clear, I would say there was one reporter in Major League Soccer, who's still actually reporting in Major League Soccer, who at one point was trying to pay a compliment to me and said that I was one of the most underrated players in Major League Soccer. And as he went to describe my game, he started with an ungainly running style. And I thought, man, that's not the way to go. I mean, if you're going to say I'm underrated and say some of the things that I do well, but don't tell me that I'm overcoming my ungainly running style. Every so often I see him and we joke about that. I had some reporters in Venezuela who I didn't care about because they were covering basketball and baseball and some other sports. And then all of a sudden my generation just kind of took over with the national team. And all of a sudden we became far more successful than we've ever been. And now these guys who were baseball reporters and basketball reporters were trying to shape opinions of people without any sort of soccer background. And sometimes they were giving flat out wrong information. I didn't care much for that, to the point to where I didn't talk much to them, I would say.
Stevie, grudges?
I don't know whether grudge is the right word, but there are two or three people in the press and former players that I won't forget anything.
Well, you've got to name names now, Stevie. You've got to give us more detail than that.
No, not at all.
But what did they do to get under your skin?
Yeah, I just... Well, just saying things that weren't true, basically. Saying things that weren't true. And just acting in a certain way that was wrong. But I know who they are, so that's all that matters.
I have to say, Dan, my approach, I think, is far healthier. I just don't talk to these people. I forget about them. Stevie still has some, like, rice stuck somewhere in here. And if he's able to see them, all of a sudden these people will disappear from the face of the earth. That's what he came across like.
Stevie, you mentioned reporters and players. Was this because something they did to you on the pitch or because something that happened elsewhere?
Stuff that happened off the pitch.
What happened?
Was this a therapy session?
I think if it can help, Stevie.
You asked the question. I don't walk around with grudges on the back of my head. You brought it up and you reminded me, and I told you I had a couple that, and Ali said it well. If they appeared over there, I wouldn't know the way because I would look through them. They're invisible to me.
So
okay.
don't give us any names. What did they do, Stevie?
Ali's like. No, nothing that needs you need to worry about.
Oh, wow, this is intriguing. Is it in your book?
No. No.
Oh, wow. I feel like we've kind of ending this show on a bit of a cliffhanger, but we're never going to know the answer.
Well, you're never going to know the answer, though.
Unless, Ali, we give Stephen some beers.
And then we'll know every answer.
That is it.
The beans may spill.
Yeah, I know, exactly right. We're all going around to Stevie's house. I'll let you know tomorrow what he says.